people and understand it a whole lot better. And I know sometimes you think when you hear me talk about and just keep stressing over and over again how the word disciples does not appear in the Bible after the book of Acts. And I stand up here and I name the books. I go from Romans to 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Philemon, Titus. I just go through all those books, and I don't do it to impress you that I can name the books. I do that so it'll really sink in how important it is to understand who this is written to. If you were writing a letter to a saved person, and you were writing it to them to edify them and build them up, you wouldn't make everything in there apply to a lost person. If you were writing to a lost person, you wouldn't write a bunch of stuff in there that you couldn't understand until after you were a church member. If someone were to ask me, Brother McElmurray, what causes so much misunderstanding and so much confusion, and why are there so many churches? Well, it's a much deeper reason than this, but one of the reasons is they do not interpret in context, and they make them that way the scriptures can mean anything to anybody. So when I go through this tonight, I hope you'll see what I mean as to why it's so important that you know who it's written to and what it's about in order to understand it. We're going to talk about the rewarding of God's raptured jewels. The rewarding of God's raptured jewels. Now, I have preached to you Revelation 11:18 so many times that, quite frankly, any one of you could probably do a better job than I do. So I will not spend much time on this. In Revelation 11:18, it's written to a church. All of Revelation is written to a church. Seven times in the second two chapters, it says, "He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches." In the very first chapter, it says it's written to the churches. Plural. There's not any such thing as a great big universal invisible church made up of all the saved. That's what causes a lot of the problems. People believe that. Then in the last chapter, in Revelation 22:16, he says, "I, Jesus, have sent mine angel to testify unto you these things in the churches." So this was written to church members. And the nations were angry. How many times have you heard me say, now they're not fighting yet because that's five chapters away in Revelation 16:16. "And thy wrath is come." And how many times have you heard me say, God's wrath has not come until this time? And the time of the dead. How many times have you heard me say, in order to judge a dead man, you've got to resurrect him. And the time of the dead, that they should be judged. And how many times have you heard me say that the judgment seat of Christ is for his children, and there they will be judged for rewards, and this is a resurrection of a bunch of people to be judged in heaven. "And the nations are angry, and thy wrath has come in the time of the dead, that they should be judged. Thou shalt give rewards unto thy servants the prophets, and to the saints, and them that fear thy name, small and great, and shouldst destroy them which destroy the earth." So one thing in this verse I really want to emphasize tonight, that is a giving of rewards at the judgment seat of Christ to the prophets, the saints, those that revere and respect his name for all the ages, right there in heaven, and they're being judged in heaven when just before God's wrath is poured out on the earth. So that's a judgment for rewards. Now I want to key in on rewards. So many times in the Bible, people stick this person into hell and stick this person into heaven, stick this person into the church, this person out, and it's the biggest mess you've ever seen. And about half the time, all these churches that are teaching that you can lose your salvation, they jump right on a lot of scriptures and say, see, that proves you can lose your salvation. Now, the subject here is rewards and a judgment of the saved. And second thing, you hear me emphasize all the time, And I just pound it, and I know times you get tired of it. Grace, 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 grace. We're saved by grace, saved by grace, saved by grace, saved by grace, saved by grace. What does that mean? I'm going to put it bluntly, and I say it reverently. If you're saved, you can live like hell and still go to heaven. Now, that's a terrible thing for a preacher to say, but that's true. That's the truth. Well, you say, Brother McElroy, we shouldn't talk like that. Yes, we should, because people need to know what grace is. You can't appreciate grace until you receive it, until you understand it. Now, all those places in there where it talks about these wicked people, these terrible people, these evil people, many times it is talking about people that are going straight to hell and burning a lake of fire. But many times it's not. There are church members who live ungodly lives. And if you don't believe that, ask some missionary Baptist preachers that have pastored as long as I have, that can live lives that are just as ungodly and just as unholy and just as unjust as the worst sinner on this earth who isn't even saved. You say, that doesn't seem fair. That's grace. And that's what grace is. So when you approach the scriptures, you've got to understand that when we come for the judgment seat of Christ, you're going to have some A1 rascals there. You're going to have some A1 rascals. And you're going to say, what's he doing here? Grace, my friend. Grace. Galatians 6, 7 through 9. Now, this is a very important principle. And a lot of times, we missionary Baptist preachers preach about securing the believer so much and talk about all these things about, don't worry, you're not going to lose your salvation. And I really hate to tell people that sometimes, because it's just, some Assembly of God preachers say, it's just like I'm telling them, go out there and do anything you want. And that's a lie. That isn't what it means at all. But this scripture is the truth. Galatians 6, 7 through 9. Be not deceived. That was written to a church. It was written to a church at Galatia. And what you see there applies to church members. Saved, born again, scripturally baptized believers. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. When you go out and plant a field of wheat or corn or whatever it is that you plant, if you sow good seed, seed that are acceptable by the ground, then and you're blessed by good weather, you'll have a good crop because you sowed good seed. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. What kind of corruption? Everything in this world that he works for, where he just cuts God out of his life and lives his life for himself, he may get a fine home, he may get a fine car, he may be eminently successful, he may be elected governor of Arkansas, he may have marvelous, wonderful, wonderful earthly possessions. But what is corruption? Corruption is that which rusts or decays away, and it's all left behind. And a church member that sows strictly to his flesh doesn't have any sowing of anything to God in his life, then he is going to reap things that rust and fade away and disappear. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Now that does not mean that if he sows, this is written to a church member. This person is already saved. It was written to the church at Galatia. He's already been scripturally baptized as a saved, born-again believer before he ever entered the water, but he's been scripturally baptized. He's in the church at Galatia. So what's it talking about? Well, if you reap a crop of earthly things that you've sowed and worked for, they're gone. They don't last. But if you reap rewards for things you've sowed in this life, spiritual things, they go with you into life everlasting, and they're there for everlasting. They never corrupt. And then he tells us, and let us not be weary in well-doing. A lot of preachers give up, they quit. A lot of church members give up, quit. Some deacons give up and quit. More quit than stay. And he says, now look, sooner or later, you're going to reap all these spiritual things I keep telling you about that as a part of everlasting life, the reward, the inheritance. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. He says, keep on keeping on. Don't give up. Daniel 11, 45 to 12, 3. And I've preached this to you so many times, you can tell me all about it. And he, the Antichrist, shall plant the tabernacles, O hell, command the tents of his palace, Apaden, command tent, between the seas, Mediterranean, Dead Sea, glorious holy mountain is the Mount Moriah. And you have the Antichrist toward the end of the tribulation period planting his tents of his command post between the seas on Mount Moriah. But he's going to get zapped and nobody can help him. Yet he shall come to his end and none shall help him. And you know how many times I've taught you when the rapture occurs and why. And at that time, we're getting toward the end of the tribulation period. We're not at the end. And the rapture doesn't occur at the end. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince, which standeth for the children of thy people, nation of Israel. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even at that same time, the vials of wrath. But God's people will be delivered from that. They won't have to go through it. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and contempt. Now, what bothers Baptist preachers, what bothers them about this a great deal, is that they have painted a rosy picture where everybody in heaven is in the bride of Christ, and won't it be wonderful there, and ring around the rosy, and roll, roll, roll your boat gently down the stream. Now, this does not mean that some people are going to wake up and have everlasting life and go to heaven, and some are going to hell and have shame and everlasting contempt. Doesn't mean that at all. They're all going to heaven, and some will have reaped a crop that adds to their everlasting life, called a reward or an inheritance. But some of them will awake to shame and everlasting contempt. Well, the problem is, in the English language, what the word shame and contempt meant. And many preachers who reject what I'm about to tell you say, I guess you picture God up there with a whip just beating them to death and shaming them all the time. And for all eternity, he's out there with a whip after them and they're shamed and they have everlasting contempt. No, it doesn't mean that at all. Let's take a look at these words for shame. But before we do, let's take a look at those who wake up and have a full reward that they brought with them to everlasting life. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn righteousness as the stars forever and ever. The point here is, whatever your inheritance is in heaven is going to determine what you are in heaven and where you live and what you do for all eternity. And if after you've been saved, you haven't served God, haven't made the effort, haven't tried to learn about God, it doesn't mean you're going to hell. It doesn't mean you're not going to be happy in heaven. It just means that you could have been a whole lot happier if you had a greater inheritance. Now, the word for shame is shepa. We want to know what these words meant to the writer, Hebrew, Daniel. Shame, shepa, comes from karap. It's 2781 in Strong's Exhaustive Concordance. Now, it means to expose by stripping, to be disgraced, to reproach. How many times have I shown you in the temple sacrifices and in the temple services that were performed how if a man was not faithful, he was not allowed to participate in that day's activities, was not allowed to sit with the high priest in his throne, and had to stand outside the eastern gate, the Susa gate, with nothing but his beach cloth on, which to a Hebrew was naked. He was stripped. And how many times have I told you about the man who wouldn't stay awake and wouldn't watch, wouldn't be faithful to his watch on the Temple Mount, how he got the bottom part of his garment lit on fire, and he ran across the Temple Mount, stripping off his garment, and stood there in a beach cloth, naked, ashamed. How many times have you heard me talk about the man in 1 Corinthians who is saved, yet so is by fire? He's a church member. It's written to the church at Corinth. Yet his wood, hay, and stubble works are burned up, and he's standing there like a picked jaybird. He's saved, yet so as through fire. Everything's gone, but he's still in heaven. That's what that's talking about. Contempt. Everlasting contempt. The word is drawn. In Strong's Exhaustive Concordance, is 18:1860. What it means is to separate from, as by separating from an object of aversion. Like Bob could have been my friend, but he wouldn't be my friend. And I liked Bob, but he became an aversion to me. Didn't want to have anything to do with me. So I just separated over here and got as far away from him as I could. In the final heavenly city, there's going to be a city three-fifths the size of the United States. There are going to be a lot of people inside that city that were true friends of the Lord. There are going to be a lot of saved people in heaven outside that city in glorified bodies, very happy. But they're going to be separated from the faithful. The city, the heavenly city, the New Jerusalem, is the city of the faithful. What's outside are those who never would become the friend of the Lord. They never would worship him. They never would learn about him. He never meant anything more to them than somebody that saved them from going to hell. And so when you look at these two verses, this verse, and you understand what the inspired words mean, it's a whole lot easier to understand that those who wake up to shame are those who are at the judgment seat of Christ, and they're shamed. They're ashamed of their lives and everlasting contempt. They're an aversion to the Lord. They were an aversion in life. And they live outside the city. They live there forever. And they're happy. They're not unhappy. Remember, we won't have jealousy, envy, hatred. Neither will they. They'll understand it. But they could have had a much more wonderful heaven. A much more wonderful place to live in heaven. Heaven's a wonderful place. But the city itself is the most wonderful place in heaven. Now, a lot of times in Scripture, these things are just grossly misinterpreted. Now, when you talk about, and they that be wise, these are the ones who will have everlasting life, but they won't be ashamed at the judgment seat of Christ, and they won't be looked upon with contempt for not living for Christ in life. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever. You have them shining as stars, apparently glorious appearance, forever. I think that's what Paul is talking about in 1 Corinthians 15:38-42. But God giveth it a body, he's talking about the resurrection body, but God giveth it a body as it hath pleased him, and to every seed his own body. If you sow corruptible seed to the flesh, don't expect a glorious, marvelous body. Oh, it'll be sinless, it'll be attractive, but it won't shine as the light of the sun. But God giveth it a body as it hath pleased him, to every seed his own body. Then he begins to make some contrast so you can understand what he's talking about. And this is written to church, to church members. All flesh is not the same flesh, but there is one kind of flesh of men, another flesh of beasts, another of fishes, and another of birds. They all have bodies, but they're all different. Then he begins to get down to the shining part. There also are celestial bodies and bodies terrestrial. The terrestrial body has a glow to it, but the celestial has a greater glow to it. But the glory of the celestial is one, and the glory of the terrestrial is another. The sun is the most glorious of all the celestial bodies. There is one glory of the sun, and another glory of the moon. You're going to have a glorious appearance in heaven of light, that is directly proportional to how faithful you were to the Lord here and how you served him in his church. And another glory of the moon and another glory of the stars. There's three different lights there. And in heaven, there'll be some that are very glorious, some that are glorious, some that are a little less glorious, and some that are barely glorious. But we'll have glorified bodies without sin and live outside the city, outside the walls of the Holy Jerusalem. Now, this was written to churches. A lot of preachers don't want to preach this. They want to preach about salvation, baptism in the church, and they're scared to death to make you realize the importance of serving in heaven, because most people won't take this, and most people will quit coming to church, and they'll find a church that's more to their liking, where all they have to hear for their itching ears is just live your life here, enjoy it fully, and when you get to heaven, everything's going to be okay. There is one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, another glory of the stars, for one star differeth from another star in glory. See that word so? That's the same thing as therefore. It's a conclusion. It's a conclusion word. So, glory of stars, glory of sun, glory of moon, so also is the resurrection of the dead. It's sown in corruption, a corruptible body. It is raised in incorruption. And some of them are going to be more glorious than others. It's that plain. It's that simple. And people need to realize that God keeps a track of everything they do after they're saved. Now, in Malachi 3, 12 through 18, God has just been talking about the millennial reign. And now he tells Israel how great it's going to be. And all nations shall call you blessed, for ye shall be a delightsome land, saith the Lord of hosts. Then he stops for a moment. He's been talking about how great it's going to be when they inherit in the millennial kingdom. And he's talking to some people there. He knows they're going to die. Their bodies are in the graves over there now. One day they're going to be resurrected. And he's telling them, one day you're going to be in a millennial reign. They'll be in glorified bodies, like I've shown you aboard, depending on their faithfulness. Now he begins to say, look, you better wake up and start doing what I told you. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. This was written to a nation where the people believed in God. Your words have been stout against me, saith the Lord. Yet ye say, what have we spoken so much against thee? He said, what are you talking about, they said. You have said it is vain to serve God. It's really hard to drag yourself down here and worship God, isn't it? It's really hard to take the time to give to God, to honor God, to know what he says you should do and do it. What's the percentage in it? What am I getting out of it? There are lots of things I could do that would make me be having more fun, more money, more profit, and more acceptability. That's what they were doing. Well, it hasn't changed. What profit is that we have kept his ordinance? What good is that? You go down there, you're baptized properly, you take the Lord's Supper properly, you keep the ordinance, you go home. What profit is that? What good does that do? Now, he's talking back in the temple days, and they had ordinances back there. We've got ordinances now. What profit is it? Well, I'll tell you what profit it is. So those people who won't do it, they're going to end up at the judgment seat of Christ, stripped of all rewards, or most rewards. They're going to end up at the judgment seat of Christ, and forever, they're going to be like someone that was an aversion to the Lord, who wouldn't serve him here. So they live outside a city, and there's not much they do to serve him there. And that we have walked mournfully before the Lord of hosts. Oh, they just walk mournfully, very unhappy. Not happy in serving God. He says, and now we call the proud happy. The nation of Israel wanted to have be prosperous, like all the other people that were living, that didn't believe in God, that didn't worship God, and they were proud and haughty, and they wanted to be like them. Yea, they that work wickedness are set up. Yea, they that tempt God are even delivered. Test God. People do test God. There was a college professor that was didn't believe in God. He was an atheist. He hated God. He hated Christ. So he got up in front of his class and he said, all right, he said, this God you believe in, this Jesus, he said, I'm going to show you he doesn't exist. And he got up on stage in front of the class and he said, okay, God, knock me down off this stage. Flatten me. Then he just stood there a minute, looked at his watch. 3 minutes passed. He said, well, you see, there's no God. Well, it just so happened there was about a 310-pound football player who was walking down the hall and heard him say it. He came in, rushed across the stage, threw an arm block in him, and the instructor sprawled out on the floor, flat on his back, knocked him off the stage. He looked up at the football player, and he said, why'd you do that? He said, God was busy, so he sent me. And so that's pretty much the way it goes. Verse 16. Now we're going to switch over to the other type. You say, well, all those people up there that said it was vain to serve God and vain to keep his ordinance and walk mournfully, and all those people went to hell. God just drew a line down the middle and said, all those that I just mentioned went to hell. That's what people like to do. The only problem is grace. Grace, grace, grace. You say, you mean to tell me that those people back there, that God said all those things, that they went to heaven? Well, I surely hope so, because about 70% of on our church roll are going to hell if they didn't. Because, brothers and sisters in Christ, that's what grace is. And I'm thankful for grace. Then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another. How do you do that? I see some of you often, some almost all the time, some about 80% of the time, and some of them that come on Sunday morning, I see them once a week for preaching. You say, well, Brother McElmurray, are you being critical? Oh, thank God that they're here. I learned something. When you get up there every Sunday and you just give them down the river and just raise Cain on them, pretty soon they're not even going to be here on Sunday morning. That's why I don't preach messages like this on Sunday morning. But you're a bunch of tough old boots. You're a little harder to run off. So I'm just telling you the way it is. And then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another. To speak often one to another, you got to assemble together. And the Lord hearkened and heard it. And a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord. That is not the book of life. When I was a younger minister, I thought it was. I thought it was. But that is not the book of life. It's a book of remembrance for people who didn't think it was vain to serve God, who kept his ordinances, who walked happily before the Lord and were thankful for what they had, who didn't call the proud happy, and didn't envy people that were set up because of their wickedness. That's who that book is. It's people that live for the Lord. It's a book of remembrance. It's a book of the faithful. And the line as to who lives in that city is going to be drawn between these two groups of pity. You say, what about the lost? Man, they're going to be burning in hell. But that's because they didn't even believe there was a God. At least these people knew what they were doing, and they were doing wrong, and at least God talked to them and tried to change them. And that thought upon his name. Some people, after they get saved, they don't want to think on his name. I know some members of this church that over the years, when somebody in their family dies, you don't know who they are because you've never seen most of them. They come running over the house, usually drunk or close. Well, they've had a little to drink. And they're just crying and weeping and telling me all this stuff and seeking for comfort and this and that. And I give it to them. I'm not mean or vicious. I'm kind and gracious to them. And they tell me, oh, Brother McElmurray, I'm going to get back in church. I'll be lucky if I see him the next Sunday. They don't think on his name until they need him. They don't think on his name and praise him and thank him for all the good things he's done for them. They just don't have time for it. And they shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, when I make up my jewels. And I will spare them. He's going to spare them the anxiety of shame at the judgment seat. He's going to spare them the anxiety of living outside the city and forever knowing, even though they have no sin, that they could have lived inside. He's going to spare them. As the man spareth his own son. Now look at those next three words. That serveth him. That's what this is all about. If all the people on this earth that are saved were serving God, we wouldn't have the problems we have right now. But the problem is most of them aren't. Then he tells about when they come back again, to rule and reign with him. Then shall ye return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not, in the millennial reign. They're the rods of iron. That's going to be our job in the millennial reign. I've told you what I believe about who will be visible and who won't be visible. But that's what we're going to do. You say, well, it seems to me that you're saying that those jewels of his, the faithful, that worshipped him and served him, are going to be allowed to serve him in the millennial reign. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. I believe that. Because then shall you return. They'll come back with Christ after the judgment seat. And they'll discern between the righteous and the wicked. And God will station them all over this earth. And whenever people start doing wicked things, they'll zap them. Spiritually, between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not. Because then God can trust you fully. Because you've been his friend. You've learned a lot about him. And you've learned a lot about yourself. And you've learned how wonderful he is. And how wonderful it'll be to serve him. Matthew 13:40-46. What does it mean when Paul wrote to the church at Ephesus? For Christ loved the church and gave himself for it, the church, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing. Again, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a merchant man seeking goodly pearls. You know what we are? We're God's jewels. We're the ones who know we're sinners. We know we're not worth the power to blow us to kingdom come. We know we're publicans. We glorify and praise God's name for saving us and using us in spite of what we are. We're not proud, haughty, and arrogant. We're people that have been humbled by the Spirit of God because we realize we're sinners saved by grace. And the kingdom of heaven is like to a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, looking for jewels. Who, when he hath found one pearl of great price, that's the local church. That's where the people come together, speak to one another. Now, all this back here before that in Malachi, that refers to the Old Testament. But there was the assembly of Israel. And people that loved God assembled together then and worshiped God in spirit and in truth. We do the same thing today in local churches. Who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all he had and bought it. He gave all that he was and emptied himself. And he did it right here. And he bought and paid for it. Well, now he bought and paid for the redemption of all the lost, whether they're ever baptized or whether they ever joined church. He died and suffered for all those who join his church, have scriptural baptism after they're saved. but are unfaithful. He died for them too. He said it is finished. That was the price he paid. And here's what he did. Philippians 2, 7 through 14. He sold all that he had, but made himself of no reputation and took upon him the form of a servant. It means he emptied himself. He emptied himself of all that he was and became a man to die for us. And was made in the likeness of men, and being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself, the God of creation, and became obedient to death, even the death of the cross. This is why you hear me quote this so often. See, all these things I've taught you all these years. Grace, 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 grace. All these things I've said over and over and over and over and over again. You thought I was just getting old. And I just kept saying the same things. To some degree, that's true. But the things that are really important in the Bible are the things that I hammered on, and I have hammered on for 28 years. Wherefore, God also hath highly exalted him and given him a name which is above every name. This is what God meant for us to do. This is what it meant when they, in the Old Testament, it said, and they thought on his name. And they came often together and spoke of him. That's what we're doing here tonight. That's why I thank God you're here. You don't know what your being here means to me. It means a lot more to God. But it means a lot to me, because Christ lives in me. And to think that a group of people who worked all day, who have other things they could be doing tonight, you came down here and you're here to worship and please God. I love you and respect you for that. But that's my calling. That's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to teach God's children. And I'm supposed to be taught myself of the Word. Don't ever think when I hammer you or say things using the Word that it's a personal vendetta or attack. Don't ever think that when I'm preaching these scriptures, I'm thinking in my mind, well, that fits so and so and so and so. I learned a long time ago, I don't know who fits what, but God does. And I guarantee you, in preaching and exhorting and teaching this Word, I can't do you any good or bad, but God does and can and will. That at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow, things in heaven and things in earth and things under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed, not in my presence only, but how much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. You've heard me do that many times. Walking over that wall, taking about, you take your salvation, it's in you, you have it, and you, egestesetai, you carry it to an ultimate conclusion, which is living properly toward God. For it is God which worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. And how many times have you heard me say how important it is for a church to learn to do all things without murmurings and disputings? Preached it many times. Did it because it's a very, very important scripture. Now let's get around to something that's really important. Revelation 2, 25, 29. But that which you have already, hold fast till I come. That's why I keep telling you, keep being faithful in church, keep coming to God's church. Don't let anything separate you from being in church or being a part of the church. Don't break away from the body. You get mad at me, get over it. I get mad at you, I'll get over it. You get mad at one another, get over it. And he that overcometh, that's the overcomer, someone that's saved. This is the person that's a jewel, man or a woman that's a jewel, a man or a woman that's a pearl, in the pearl itself, the church. And he that overcometh and keepeth my works to the end, hold fast till I come. To him will I give power over the nations. In Malachi we're told to discern between the righteous and the wicked. And I will give power over the nations. You're going to get a good job in heaven if you do a good job for God here. You're going to be a wonderful, faithful servant in heaven if you've been a wonderful, faithful servant here, because you're going to be given lots to do, and you won't have any restrictions to stop you from doing it then. This overcomer will rule them with a rod of iron. He'll discern, she'll discern between the good and the evil. You'll have quite a job, and you'll have the wisdom and intelligence and ability given by God to do it, and you won't make any mistakes because you'll be guided by God, and you'll enjoy every minute of it, I guarantee it. Even as I received of my Father. And I will give him the morning star. Jesus is the morning star. He'll give himself to you. It'll be a relationship where you'll be in harmony with Christ and all the other saints. And you'll be working for Jesus, and you'll love every second of it forever and ever and ever. Notice who he wrote this to. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. I know sometimes you probably get tired of hearing it, and you think that this is something I just hammer on, and it's not that important. The most important thing in your life, if you're a child of God, is to be faithful in his church, to love the church, to contribute to the church, to give to the church, to be faithful in church. Galatians 6:7. That's true. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap. Revelation 22:11-6. 11-16. That's a church member. That's a church member. Someone that's not only saved, but has been scripturally baptized. He that is unjust. What does that mean? He lives an unfaithful lifestyle. A church member. Let him be unjust still. He said, if he does that all his life, he said, I'm going to make sure he's still doing it at the finish, whether he dies by natural death or at the rapture. And he which is filthy, that's an unfaithful lifestyle. Don't tell me church members can't live unfaithful lifestyles. Don't tell me they can't be unjust. Don't tell me they can't be filthy. That's grace. That's grace. And every time we see expressions like that, we automatically want to jam them into hell. I'm going to tell you, some of the most unjust and filthy church members and filthy people I've ever known were members of God's local churches. He that is unjust, unfaithful lifestyle, let him be unjust still. He which is faithful, unfaithful lifestyle, let him be filthy still. And he that is righteous, a faithful lifestyle, let him be righteous still. And he that is holy, a faithful lifestyle, let him be holy still. Listen, God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. You make an effort to serve God. You keep on trying, and you're still going to be doing it when God comes. That's what the still is all about. At the point or instant of your death, whether it occurs tonight or whether it occurs when Jesus comes. He says, behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me. The subject here is reward. It's reward. To give every man according as his work shall be. This is his work. I'm Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life and may enter in through the gates into the city. That's a faithful lifestyle completed. That's the lifestyle they lived in this life. Now, don't jump down here and all of a sudden forget this is written to a church and all of a sudden forget that you've got unjust people up here in verse 11 and you've got faithful people. Because right down here you got faithful people in a church in verse 14. Blessed are they that do his commandments, they may have right to the tree of life and may enter through the gates of the city. For without, now here are the ones that are stripped, the ones that are lived in a life of aversion toward God and are separated outside the city. For without, without what? Without the gates of the city. That's not hell there. Oh, these people got to be in hell. For without are dogs and sorcerers and whoremongers and murderers and idolaters and whosoever liveth and maketh an unfaithful lifestyle complete. Oh, no, they went to hell. I know they went to hell. They had to go to hell. Grace, 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 grace. Believe it or not, they went to heaven. Believe it or not, they were church members. But don't follow their example. I, Jesus, have sent mine angel to testify to these things in the churches. I'm the root and offspring of David in the bright and morning star. I'm going to include this last thing very quickly. It's one last sheet because I want to make a point. The reward is the inheritance. Revelation 22:12-15. Behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me to give every man according to his works shall be. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life and enter in through the gates in the city. Those are the ones that were living righteous, holy lives. For without are dogs and sorcerers and whoremongers and murderers and idolaters and whosoever loveth and maketh the lie. Those were church members that were living unjust, filthy lives. You say, well, brother, they had to go to hell. Oh, no. Ephesians 5:1-5, written to a church at Ephesus. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also hath loved us and hath given him for an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. Well, those are the jewels. Those are the pearls. The pearls in the pearl of great price. Now, what about all these people up here in verse 15? But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it be once named among you as the coming saints. when he wrote this, it had to be possible for it to be named among them, or he would never have told them not to do it. And it was and is. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. Now notice this. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, look at this up here, dogs, sorcerers, whoremongers, murderers, idolaters, and whosoever loves to make of life. Look at this down here. For this you know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, hath any inheritance, does not say he doesn't go to heaven. He gets stripped. And throughout all eternity, he'll have to live in a glorified body outside the city, very happy. But they were an aversion to God in this life. And when they got to heaven, they weren't given anything to do. Hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God.